All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our NFL podcast for Tuesday, October 24th. I'm Doug Norrie, that is
James.
And I'm back in my home base with better sound equipment, so hopefully the podcast sounds better from here on going forward. We're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short. Still time to grab that free three-day trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab, optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings, NFL, NBA, NHL base projections. It's all there under one subscription package. We don't section it off by site or provider or by whoever wrote
really
the article
nice
that week. Yeah, that's a lot of places that do. They have all these like, tiered subscription packages. Not us. We can't be bothered. It seems like too hard to do that kind of thing. So we just don't.
The main reason actually is because when we made the site originally, like now we have fancy developers and people that take care of that kind of thing. But it was me doing it back in the day, Doug, and there wasn't a WordPress plugin for that. So, you know, we stuck with it because it works for us.
Sometimes you just can't clear that kind of hurdle even when you have all the resources at your disposal. Anyway, dfsr.com/NBA will get you started and free for 3 days, $29.95 a month after that. All right, buddy, week 7 of the NFL is in the books. Wasn't that all that exciting of a week? I mean, there were some couple games that kind of, I don't know, were close-ish. There were some epic blowouts. The two big injury pieces of news, and they're not really pieces of news for, like, the NFL writ large because like, these teams weren't all that good, but Carson Palmer is lost. It's more about, like, what we do fantasy purposes-wise. So Carson right. Palmer looks like he's going to be out, I believe, for the rest of the year. With a broken arm, and then the other one, oh geez, I totally forgot. Oh, Jay Cutler. He's so unforgettable that I forgot him, even though I have him on my notes here. Jay Cutler goes down as well. Seemed like the Dolphins locker room sort of applauded that quietly. Didn't seem like they wanted to play with him at all. He goes down too. It's more about what we do now from fantasy purposes. I mean, guys like Fitzgerald and Landry were guys that we targeted pretty heavily to start the season. Adrian Peterson looked like he was sort of possibly making a small minor comeback in the run game. Guys like Jay Ajayi, there are guys on these teams that are fantasy relevant. What does it do to your team when you lose? It's not like Palmer and Cutler were good, so don't get me wrong there. It's that their teams were able to do something along the lines of fantasy production when they were behind center. How much does it change our assumptions on these two teams going forward?
Well, yeah, I think so. The Cardinals don't play this week, so you know we get a week to think about it or whatever. But I think there already the production was so all over the place that I think we can pretty safely ignore them for a while. We'll have to see what the prices come out at, of course. Like we can't. The reason that we can't make a big declaration is if it's Fitzgerald is 5,800, we'll probably just play him anyway. Given that we don't know at this point, and if he's going to be in the 7,000s range, you simply can't play the guy. Likewise with Peterson. I mean, he struggled this last game, so now he's got one great game, one completely terrible game. The carries weren't even really there. Yeah, there were game script issues, but there are going to be game script issues now if they don't have a quarterback. So I think the Cardinals are in the dumpster. Miami, a little more interesting. Kind of nice that that game's on Thursday this week against Baltimore. So, you know, it's not really a main slate thing. We don't have to sweat it too much. I think a lot of people that play Thursdays do so, you know, just trying to take safe guys that they know are going to play over the weekend and hope to kind of get there on other people taking too many risks. Obviously, don't play Landry in this game and keep an eye on it and see what happens. I don't think any of the other guys on Miami are really interesting to me. You know, there was Kenny Stills' breakout week. Which, you know, some small percentage of people managed to tap into. 6 catches, 2 touchdowns, 85 yards. I think you can pretty safely continue to ignore that because, again, we don't know what the quarterback play is going to look like. So, yeah, unfortunately, we do lose some, especially in Landry, a pretty safe option for the passing game at a pretty reasonable price. But we just have to wait and see because given that he's such a short yardage receiver, the next guy who comes in could actually connect with him. So we just don't know yet.
Matt Moore didn't look horrible. You know, he was 62% completion percentage coming in. He has had a few NFL reps in the past, although, like you said, you get kind of lucky not really having to make this decision this week because between the Thursday slate and the Baltimore defense, I don't think this would be a place we would go anyway. So I think it's kind of nice.
And increased prices. Like, I just don't. Yeah, you're just not doing it either way.
It's kind of nice to get it just to have the built-in excuse anyway to not really go there. I mean, Moore is coming at 4,500 on DraftKings that, like, does start to beg the question of what you can pay. We'll look at that over the course of the week. You know, we went through a week last week where we were kind of happy. Well, not happy. We were resigned to start some cheaper quarterbacks in cash because that just seemed like the way to go. It sort of worked. It did work out from their perspective, from the value perspective on guys like Bortles, Tyrod Taylor. Even Hundley was serviceable, though not great. Really, it was the other two guys that were coming in rock bottom pricing that we talked about, and they all were basically able to hit value on DraftKings. Moore is 4,500 is the cheapest you'll ever see for a starting quarterback. So that's really the only reason to consider. I think possibly consider him on the Thursday slate if you wanted to spend up big, and we'll kind of take a look at some of the, just where he's going. I mean, you know, for projection purposes, I kind of just comped him to Cutler. They're pretty similar. They're both pretty. I mean, in that they're not all that good.
Right.
I mean, it's like it's kind of easy to comp bad quarterbacks. You know, speaking of bad quarterbacks, I'm not sure if he's bad. I texted you yesterday because this was a game I was kind of watching and I just didn't realize this was happening. This is really kind of happening in the background. And I thought when I was kind of querying for just for different usage stuff so I could update the system yesterday, I thought like there was a mistake. Mitch Trubisky, I texted you yesterday. I said, take a wild guess how many passes you think Mitch Trubisky in a win, in a game where he played the entire game and they won. How many passes?
So if I would have looked at the score, I would have guessed 17. Given that you asked me, I thought it was going to be lower than that. So I said 12. And then you told me it was
seven passes in a game.
Unbelievable.
How? I mean, this is like what Navy.
It's like my old high school team. Yeah.
It's like what Navy does. You know, like Navy when they run the triple option. You know, they just the guy like, begrudgingly throws five passes when they just don't get there by third down. Like this is unbelievable for an NFL team. I haven't looked it up if this is a record. I'm sure someone's written about it. Just in an age of content in every single space, I'm sure I could probably Google this pretty quickly and figure it out. But to throw seven passes. And it's something you have, I mean, this is what, two things. One, this is what happens when your team scores two defensive touchdowns, right? Like, you just aren't going to have the ball at all. Really, you're just going to cut down fully on two possessions and just give the other team the ball back. But besides that, you know, what do you do with a team that doesn't want to throw the ball at all? Like, you know, they have guys like Jordan Howard who get pretty elite touches, and I still can't believe they won this game, but and actually, I mean, and shut out Carolina to boot. But
yeah, and even Howard's touches weren't really elite in this one. I mean, he had 21 touches, which is solid. He was pretty bad with those touches, getting just 65 yards. I think he's going to continue to be kind of a high risk, high reward player. Where if he does have those weeks where he gets 30 touches and managed to break off one long one or something, he can put up big time production. He's still not priced like the other guys getting the same opportunity as him, 6,900. But the thing is, you know, and football is really interesting this way, where like, if you just never pass, if you have it in you to throw single-digit passes in a game, it doesn't really matter who your running back is because the other team could just put more players on him. You know, it's like the equivalent in basketball. If you have Rajon Rondo standing around the three-point line, they just ignore him, and then the rest of the guys have to play 4-on-5. You know, so I think that's kind of the situation we're looking at here, which makes Howard kind of a big upside but selectively deployed play. I don't think you can do it. You know, just yet here. And New Orleans is a pretty good matchup. I think you can definitely run it out there for big tournaments here. But yeah, I don't think you can just plug him in cash games and just close your eyes and hope.
Well, you can say 21 carries. I agree with every single one of your points there. But you can say 21 carries is low. You can also say he got 75% of his team's offensive touches. Like, because when you add in the other seven,
that's a good point. I forgot that they only had seven passes. Right,
so 75% of the offensive touches did go to Jordan Howard. Yeah. He's not going to get that kind of breakdown on a week to week basis, obviously. So. This was a complete outlier.
I don't know. He might. He had 40 touches 2 weeks ago. Like, this just might be the plan. If they just don't think Trubisky is good enough, and he just probably isn't, they could do like the old 1999 Hightstown Rams, give it to Bakir Cole 40 times a game and just throw out six or seven passes only when the game is so out of hand that you just have to pass or your fans will.
But, yeah, but ours was North Temple High School, Jamal Heron. So every team had one. Had a guy that they just need in high school to give the ball to every time. I don't know. This is going to be an interesting one. There is a pretty high over-under for that game going in just because you have the Saints on that side of the ball. So interesting to see where we land on Howard. I mean, obviously, Trubisky's not a play. It was more just kind of standing out that you just don't ever see that kind of production. Other new notes or just like kind of outstanding performances that beg the question of what do we do with guys from here? Amari Cooper. So this was all the way back to Thursday, but we never really talked about it because we just did a game by game breakdown and then we just kind of went off on our way first for the week. But Amari Cooper, after a season of like kind of not touching the ball, just completely horrendous conversion rates. You know, they had some quarterback issues in there where they had to start EJ Manuel for a couple games. So, I mean, maybe you can forgive him for that. He had a ton of drops even up until that point. All of a sudden goes out on Thursday night against Kansas City, gets 19 targets, converts him to 11 for 210 and two touchdowns. His targets per game jumped like the average targets per game for Cooper jumped like 1.8 targets in just 1 week. What do we do with what do we do with his kind of like where do we project him for targets going forward here?
I don't think you can change the projection too much. I mean, you certainly can't go, I don't think, double digits, right? Like, I mean, 19 is a ton, and it did work, but you can't just jump him from the max of 8 to, like, an average of 12, can you?
No, I don't think so, though. Man, I'm tempted to, and people will. And this is where I'm going to, like, will. This is where I get a little, you know, this is like the Julio Jones question, right? Like, I would put them in similar kind of camps. I think they are, you know, they're obviously pedigree guys. They're not exactly the same because Jones is a little bit more of a tracker.
Yeah, but it's a matter of degrees, right? It's just kind of a similar concept, except Jones is the expensive version of this.
Right, and so these are guys that are the perception on them, I suspect, is a lot higher than what the reality is going to be on the average going forward. Now, that being said, where you run into problems with these kind of situations is the upside on them is higher than just about anybody else in the league. So the weeks you miss on these guys, it really stands out, right? Like, so we saw another week where, and the reason I'm comparing is because they are pedigree guys who it seems like they should be getting 10 to 11 targets a game, and then they just haven't. Like, Jones was with another guy who was getting like 8.5 targets a game or something like that, maybe even less before last week. He had 13 targets, and then Cooper had 19. The games where they're going to be good, they're going to be the best, and then there's just too many games in their resume where they have 7 targets, and this is why I just don't know what to do with them. My gut is to project them higher than I would project other guys that didn't have the same names, and I'm not sure if that's just totally correct.
No, but I think the argument for Cooper here, because again, like, we wouldn't have played him over like Jarvis Landry or even Demaryius Thomas, or, you know, even if Cooper had had this week 2 weeks ago, I guess is what I'm saying. We wouldn't have played him over Larry Fitzgerald, you know, these kind of guys in the same price range who bring a lot more safety to the table. But for this week on the main slate in particular, there really is a lack of wide receiver, like safe wide receivers in that 6,500 to 7,500 range. And I think for that reason, we might just wind up looking at it and being like, let's just play the guy, you know, because I think if he is going to have high ownership percentage, you know, if some of these other guys that we were perceiving to be fairly safe, like Demaryius Thomas, you know, who just disappears completely, gets 6 targets and 2 receptions, you know, maybe even in like Adam Thielen, don't call me Thielen, who went out there, had a lot of targets again, but didn't really do a whole lot with them. Like, if we look at that and think, well, Cooper's just going to have high ownership, maybe saying he did turn the corner with Carr, maybe last week was actually the beginning of something new and not the outlier. I mean, 19 targets is so many targets. It's not like I would be a lot more concerned if he just had 10 targets and caught 9 of them for 200 yards, right? Like, because that's utterly in play here. But given the fact that they just kept throwing the ball, it just seems like that was the plan all along. And I think if that's the case, then yeah, maybe bumping him up a little bit more is appropriate here.
Yeah, it's going to take an overhaul to his projections because he's been so bad this season. And we do, like, we start slowly bringing in per season stats or the current season stats with our projections. So he's going to be dragged down by just he's stunk this year before this game, basically, right? Like, it looked like it was going to be.
I mean, he was terrible.
Oh, yeah,
he was one of the worst in the league.
He had, like, the best opening. He had an opening drive where he caught a touchdown in the first game of the season, and then he systematically dropped 3 touchdown passes on the next drive right after that, and then that was just – and he's just been garbage since. So this is one of those situations, and we don't get into this situation all too often during an NFL season because guys typically are who they are, especially when you get, like, through 7 to 8 games of a season, right? Like, and drawing off a previous season's numbers, which we're still kind of with guys like Cooper, where their quarterback play hasn't changed and there's not too much difference with their team. Like, I feel pretty comfortable doing that. But this is a situation where he's been so bad this year that to get him into that range, I mean, honestly, to get him, bring him up even to like the Brandon Cooks range for our purposes is going to take an overhaul to his projection. I think we'll probably end up doing it. One encouraging thing I also read about Cooper this week, again, I don't really notice these things too much when they happen, but I like to read people that do, is that this week, unlike others, he lined up way more in the slot than he ever had really before. So he'd been typically strictly an outside wide receiver. They lined him up in the slot a ton. I don't know if that was to get him away from Marcus Peters or just kind of like a new look, and they figured this is something that this is like a new plan for him because he operates really well out of this kind of area. If that's the case going forward, maybe there is something to it too. So it's really one of those truly outlier games that probably is makes us change something about the projection going forward, and I think it's probably correct. Julio Jones too, I mean, he had 13 targets. He was the other guy I mentioned here. Where do we land on him? He's a guy, the Falcons offense has been completely garbage since jettisoning the offensive coordinator in the offseason to greener pastures for him for the head coaching job. But their offense looks like it's really struggling. It seems like they should be throwing the ball to Jones a lot more. He did get a bunch of targets this week. How comfortable do we feel with him giving him, you know, double-digit targets on a week-to-week basis?
I'm not going to change him very much in my estimation. New England this season allowed the very most passing yards to opposing quarterbacks. Julio was obviously a huge beneficiary of that. Vegas liked him as the highest overall receiving yards wide receiver going into this week, at least per the player props. I suspect that won't be the case next week. I think Antonio Brown will take that mantle back on. But I think Jones, he's going to remain, for me, just a little bit too expensive, I think, for what I can project him for opportunity-wise. And given that that's the case, I probably just won't play him at these prices. I mean, the Jets, going from the New England matchup to the Jets matchup isn't a terrible change, like in terms of overall passing yards allowed. But in terms of yards per attempt, the Jets are actually one of the best teams in the league at 6.8 yards per attempt allowed, where New England's 8.4, one of the very worst in the league. So, taken all together, I think Julio won't be a play for me this week in all likelihood. But I'm going to continue to monitor it, because if he goes out there and gets another 12, 13 targets, we can probably pretty safely assume that the Falcons are just correcting whatever it was that was making it so they couldn't get him the ball earlier.
Yeah, Antonio season. Brown only had 10 targets this week. He's been the overall target leader. That was a little bit of game script stuff. So, you know, the game was kind of out of hand, and they had turned the ball over to Bell, who sees another week of just insane run. Every week I feel like we're going to be how can we project a guy for this many carries on a given week? Like, when we project him for 25 carries and 6 targets or something like that going into last week, I'm like, well, this is just completely insane to give a guy this much usage, because even this, at some point, it's just irresponsible by the team to give the ball a guy this many times. And that's when I project him for 31 touches. He carried just 35 times on the ground alone this game, plus some targets through the air. I think 4 targets through the air. So butting up against 40 touches for a game. Is there going to be a week that we just see it just drop off? Is there going to be a week where they just kind of say this is like enough is enough? Or is like the plan here to just keep doing this with Bell? Because and if that's the case,
they've been doing this for multiple seasons. I mean, the Steelers are really interesting in this way, and they're a very unique team, because you just don't see a lot of teams doing this. And you know, like, take Antonio Brown, and I'll get to Bell in a second too. His fewest targets on the season is 9. Julio Jones's third most that would be Julio Jones's third most targets on the season if he were to get 9 targets in a game. So, you know, comparing those two guys safety wise, it's just Brown by a country mile. And I think when you get into the running back category, Bell is the Antonio Brown of running backs. And I don't know how they only have 2 skill position players who, you know, garner whatever it is, 1,000,000% of the total opportunities here. But yeah, they've done this every time they can. They're happy to give him the ball 25 times a game. If they'll take 30, they'll take 40 if you know, I guess the government allows them to. It does feel a little bit like it's kind of gladiator's time with Le'Veon Bell, but back-to-back weeks with 38 touches. But yeah, I think he's the safest. You know, even with Zeke's big week here, I think he is easily the safest running back in the NFL.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see how people compare him and Zeke. I mean, Zeke's coming off a fantastic performance, over 200.
Yeah, 3 touchdowns, right? You know, it's tough to beat that.
So yeah, one was the long receiving touchdown, but their plan was to give him the ball, I think, in between all those plays anyway. So not to say he would have the exact same week without it, but they'd already given him the ball 26 times up to that point in the game, and they basically sat out like that most of the fourth quarter. Like, he carried 26 times basically in the first like 3.5 quarters or something like that. So you know, it's interesting to hear you say the Bell and Zeke argument. I think more people will think it's closer than maybe it really is going into this week, just because you're riding high off that Zeke game. But yeah, I mean, at some point the Bell wheels are just going to fall off. There's no other way around it. The math just says this. There's just a limit to how many carries you can have in this. Now, it might not happen this year, right?
It doesn't usually happen in the middle of the season.
Right.
It's oftentimes the guy shows up the next year and just looks slow. And I think that's probably where we're headed.
Yeah, no, it seems completely impossible that wouldn't be the case. All right, other things that stood out to you this week, those are the ones that kind of jumped out to me between the injuries and some of the performances. What other things kind of stood out to you from Week 7 in the NFL?
Yeah, you know, me, I like to take a high-level recap and just figure out how things are shaking out in terms of the run versus the pass this week, where the big performances were coming from. This week we had precious few wide receivers go for more than 100 yards. We had just five of them. And to give you those names to try to help you figure out if you could have guessed who they would be, it's Amari Cooper at 210 after multiple weeks of one fantasy point. Ted Ginn, your boy, seven catches, 100 yards. Tyreek Hill, you know, actually a guy. Deontay Thompson had 100 yards on four catches. Don't count on that going forward. And then Allen Hurns had 101 yards on five targets. And then, you know, some names you recognize in the 90s there with Julio Jones and Jarvis Landry. But a wide receiver just was wide open again. I think this is why we continue to kind of key in on mid-range value at wide receiver. I think, you know, as you can, and it didn't happen to work out this week by and large. I mean, we liked Landry a lot, got a little spooked at the last minute with some of the weather stuff in Miami, so he didn't wind up in our optimal lineups, but he's a guy we were really keying in on. I think some of the other guys will continue to be great values going forward, like Adam Thielen and so on. But yeah, this is not the season where you just get the three guys at the top of the heap and they're just all vying for supremacy every week. It's been kind of crazy. On the running back side of the ball, you had Zeke lead all rushers, 147 yards and 219 total yards. And then you had Bell. So I think we do have a 1-2 in the running back category. These guys are very consistently putting up totals. And then after that, it was a kind of a wide open field again. Aaron Jones, I'm curious to know what you think about him. 20 total touches, 138 yards. TJ Yeldon randomly, just ignore that completely because he had the 58-yard touchdown. Latavius Murray, we were arguing about the McKinnon versus Murray thing. And then Todd Gurley and Mark Ingram, who are more known quantities. But let's talk about the random dudes who showed up at the top of the running back list. Start with Latavius Murray. What do you think about him? I mean, you know, we were going back and forth trying to figure out if it was going to be him or McKinnon. We were projecting in our system a pretty clean split of even carries. Murray gets more carries and does more with them. What do you think the situation looks like there going forward?
Yeah, he's going to be game script dependent, really. And running backs like that are really scary because they... You know, this game worked out because they were winning and they were able to just kind of run him. He did have a long touchdown run, I think like a 35 yarder or something like that. So that did boost his overall just looks. Having 18 carries isn't anything to write home about.
McKinnon had 14, by the way. So they still basically split carries.
Yeah, he's pretty much just, it's a stay away for me, I think, going forward. Just McKinnon's too involved. There's too many scenarios that just do not have Murray involved in the game, especially even in close games. I don't think that they're close games or even just like down by a score. I don't think he's really the guy that they're going to look to. So he's not. Now the Jones thing is interesting though, because the Packers after his game and the game before, they would be nuts. And actually, and also just factoring what Ty Montgomery really hasn't done this season, they would be absolutely nuts if they went back to Montgomery. I just don't think they.
Well, can. Montgomery's not a running back, right? I mean, he was a wide receiver who was like okay at running back last year, so they plugged him in again. But yeah, they're definitely looking for someone who's more comfortable back there.
Yeah, Montgomery's a scenario where I was talking about this weekend to somebody, and Montgomery seems to be like a case of like, yeah, of course, this is what happens when you just don't play a position your whole life, and you're in competition with guys who have played the position your whole life, and even if your athleticism is the same or you're more athletic, just the amount of reps that you need, I suspect, to just be a really quality running back in any scenario, but an NFL running back to boot, I think that's just something that was possibly overrated on Montgomery, and he looked okay last year, but the reason he probably looked a little better than he was is because they just didn't have any other options. I mean, they were so bereft of talent there that they had to just convert a wide receiver into a running back because they had nobody else to play.
Because like the other people that also played running back in college were like, I don't know, I'm hurt.
Exactly. And so like, and I think, but now that if they found this in Jones, and this happens every year in the NFL, a completely no-name guy comes out of nowhere. Now it hasn't happened as much this year, right? Like where a guy who is just
about the time of year it happens, right? I mean, Kareem Hunt, right. Easy to forget that he was that guy going into the season. No one had him That's ranked correct. Anywhere. You got him in like the millionth round of your famous blog talk radio league, right? So like people,
that's not looking good. Yeah, no.
But I'm sure it never does, buddy. We're not daily fantasy players for nothing. But yeah, well, who can pay about it? Season long, come on now. But Aaron Jones, Aaron Jones, as I like to think of him, does step in here. I think I like to look at the difference in yards per carry between guys on the same team, because to some level, it's instructive to see who's actually succeeding within the confines of the system and how much of it is just the system. In this case, it sure seems like Montgomery goes out there four carries for 6 yards and Jones goes out there for 17 for 131. So, you know, one seems to be working, one seems to be doesn't. I don't know how much opportunity you could project him for going forward. It's kind of tricky because it has been a little bit up and down. They don't play this week, so we get 2 weeks to wait on it. But yeah, definitely a dude to keep an eye on going forward, especially if the price comes in pretty low, because, you know, he could actually facilitate you paying up in other spots.
I think what you're going to see, too, is that they're going to come out of this bye week and they're just going to say he's the definitive starting running back going forward, and that Montgomery either shifts back to like more of a slot receiver, change of pace, just like receiving running back, third down guy, although Jones did catch some balls.
In that role. Sure.
Yeah, and Jones caught some balls, too. So it's like, I don't know. They could just make go exclusive with him. But I do think you'll come out of this week with him there. One guy that I'm still very pretty high on after this week was Mark Ingram. 22 carries for him. The move from Peterson away from the Saints has clearly just opened up Ingram as their every down running back, or not every down running back because they have Kamara, but the bell cow kind of guy.
A huge opportunity for sure.
Yes. And this is a situation like this is exactly what we need in a Saints offense that looks pretty good with good quarterback play. You don't get in the current NFL, there just aren't a lot of guys like this that have a good quarterback and that have a team that are also willing to give him the ball. Like there's, I don't know, Elliott Bell, a couple other guys that fit this. I mean, even like Gurley and like Jordan Howard, like they don't have great quarterback play, right? Like they just but Ingram does, and so he, you know, Kareem Hunt I guess fits in that first category as well. But I do like the carries here. I like the targets as well. Kamara gets enough touches that he's never going to be. Ingram's never going to get into like that 30 touches a game category, like up with those with the big boys.
25 this week, dude. That's pretty darn 26. Like,
right? Yeah, no. And that's what. I really like that the price has come up a little bit on him, but he gets Chicago this week. Chicago's been decent on defense, but his opportunity. If you look at kind of price tiers, his opportunity on the main slate is significantly better than almost anybody else in around that 7,000 range on FanDuel. So I think that you could see him coming in again, in cash games, probably just because of the way the slate shakes out. And actually, one thing that is going to be weird about this week, this is between, there's six teams on buys. There's a Thursday game, there's another London game, and then there's the Monday night game. And then if you take DraftKings where you just eliminate the Sunday night game, this is a really short NFL slate. Like there's just not that many options.
Yeah, well, that DraftKings, that's Pittsburgh, Detroit. So you get some real fantasy guys out of the pool there too.
Yeah, it's going to be weird from that perspective. The player pool is going to be pretty drastically cut, and with pricing getting tighter as the season goes on, with no real, I mean, look, there's injury stuff that creeps up all the time during the week, so can't really make a 100% statement on this. But you know, at the first glance, there do not appear to be any puntish type of guys on such a short slate. So I think it's going to be an interesting one just from the player pool is drastically reduced. Anything else before we get out of here? Anything else stand out to you from week 7?
No, I don't think so. But before we go, I do want to give people a sponsor that they can go check out, and that would be NoHalftime.com. Hopefully, you use NoHalftime's app this weekend to follow the NFL, because it really is the best way to just settle those arguments with your stupid friends. Like, you know, your brother-in-law Casey was harassing you about Brett Hundley all weekend, Doug, and going into the weekend, and you could have said, "Buddy, I like Bortles better," and he can sit there and text you till you go over your overtime texts. Hopefully, you have unlimited text by now. Texts are really just a small piece of data, but yes, that's really excellent. But yeah, you could say, "Buddy, let's put it on NoHalftime, send him the challenge," and you could go from there. So use promo code DFSR, you can get a 50% bonus up to $50 on your first deposit at NoHalftime. Check them out. They love us, and we love them too. It's kind of mutual that way. So yeah, NoHalftime, and I think that's about it. So yeah, should we end this now, Doug, or do you want to give them the DFSR speech as well?
No, I'll give it the beginning. Everyone knows what it is. All right, we'll be back again. We'll be back again later in the week talking about cash game plays, and then also the separate podcast for a game-by-game breakdown looking at the very few games that are being played in the NFL this week. Buddy, talk to you again later in the week. And one more reminder, if you're doing NBA DFS, we have an NBA DFS podcast as well. We record that on the same days as we record our football podcast. So go check that out in the feed. I put the iTunes link for that in our show notes. So go subscribe and rate that and review that as well and get some of your NBA fix on. And buddy, talk to you later on the week when we talk cash game plays.
Peace.